From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Greetings, agents, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing in Dallas, Texas, and joining me is Mr. Stuart Balk out in Australia. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, Stu. Bye-bye, Zuckerberg.
Stu is defooing from social media. Or not social media, I shouldn't say that, from Facebook. Anyway, and in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, we have Mr. John Grace.
Yeah. Hola, everybody. Still on Facebook. Sadly.
Yeah, I'm still on Facebook. We're still in that group, so don't be leaving the group yet.
Our manager Winston Humphrey will be popping in once a week only, have a look around, pass on his any words that I have to him. You know,
but don't tell the Kingston police that he's there.
Right. No, don't do that, please. Yeah, don't. Yeah. We'll sort of trade it off. You know, you'll get my thoughts via Winston once a week, but if you tell the Kingston police, then basically, you know, you'll never hear about me again. But yeah, honestly, just like real quick, for those who think I've blocked them on sucker shit, I haven't. I've just deactivated my account. It is wiped, gone.
I think in your in our conversation logs, it just says your name isn't Stuart Balk anymore. It's Oppressed Citizen.
That's it. Yeah, I changed it before I deactivated it. I thought that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a reflection of my thoughts on that shithole.
So you pulled a Ronin Roe, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's gone. Bye bye.
Well, so this week, guys, we're returning to another well. You know, sometimes we go back to the Dirty Harry well. Well, this week we're going back to the James Bond well. The last time we talked Bond, I think it was just John and I, and we talked about For Your Eyes Only.
Yes.
This week, and this is John's pick, we're doing the second James Bond movie. We're doing a Connery film, From Russia with Love, directed by Terrence Young, produced by Harry Saltzman and Albert R. Broccoli, screenplay by Richard Maybaum. Starring Sean Connery, you've got Robert Shaw, Daniela Bianchi, Lottie Linha, and Pedro Armendariz. Music by John Barry, edited by Peter Hunt, who would go on to direct Majesty's Secret Service. And, this is the follow-up to Dr. No, and it's also the first time we have Desmond Llewellyn as Q, by the way. But this is the follow-up to Dr. No, and it's, you know, one of the times in the old Bond movies where it kind of establishes a continuity, and because they mentioned the killing of Dr. No, but it's the plot is basically Spectre, the criminal organization headed by Blofeld, is working the British and the Soviets against each other to get a Lecter codebreaker device, and
Blofeld, aka George Soros.
Yeah, but George Soros is trying to get the Lecter, and he's working the Soviets and the British against each other, trying to get them to, you know, they're attacking them thinking that they're attacking each other. James Bond is sort of the agent that's put in the middle of it, and he's got to get this hot Russian babe across enemy lines, and she's working for an agent for Russia. Bond's an agent for Britain, and all kinds of craziness in the occupied city of Constantinople ensues. So, I think for a lot of people, this is one of the definitive James Bond movies. But John, why don't you talk a little bit about why you picked this one?
Because it's often regarded as the best Connery Bond, and it's for many, it's the best of the series.
This and one you don't like, Goldfinger, are often thrown out as the best Connery.
Goldfinger, and then Honor, Majesty, Secret Service is regarded as like, you know, really for most it's one or the other. It's From Russia with Love.
I would argue You Only Live Twice is the best Bond movie.
I watched that one again not long ago. And
I like it a lot.
I like You Only Live Twice, but you know, it's a little big. I don't know who's the guy who directed that one? Lewis Gilbert.
Yeah.
His Bond movies can be a ton of fun, but they can also be like eating tons of candy.
you can't think about them at all. You cannot think about the plot or
no
the logic or how stupid everybody is.
They're very his Bond movies are the most fantastical ones. So just for those of you out in Rio Linda, the Bond movies Gilbert directed are You Only Live Twice, The Spy Who Loved Me, and Moonraker.
Yeah. So,
the biggest and most absurd ones.
And he directed Alfie, the Michael Caine.
Oh, that's right.
It's a good movie. That's a good movie.
It is. Yeah. It is a good movie. It's a very good film. But the funny thing is, he made the Bond movies that are just like these. Alfie's a very believable, realistic comedy drama. But he makes these Bond movies that are like the biggest, most science fiction-y and craziest.
Yeah, like a lot of people forget that You Only Live Twice, the screenplay was written by Roald Dahl.
Right.
The guy like Matilda and James and the Giant Peach and stuff like that. But You Only Live Twice kind of has that sort of goofy sort of sensibility with like the little helicopter, little Nelly. But he was also writing another Ian Fleming adaptation, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, for the Broccoli and Saltzman. So, you know, there's
a gay anal movie about that with a different title.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'll never see that. It was probably directed by Tom DeSimone.
It was called Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. But,
all right.
Yeah. It's a
probably stars the guy who played the killer in The Enforcer. Head of the terrorists.
No, it stars probably stars a guy out of Fright Night.
Oh yeah, it could start.
Played the best
well.
Friend. Yeah, that was a bad joke. Never mind. It was a really really bad joke. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you need new writers, Stu.
Yeah, you hear that, you lazy bastards? Write something better. Christ. the writers are nodding their head and sweating, so. It's all right. But can I just pivot away for a moment? So I've just got an email about meeting single female bodybuilders. Join now for free. All right.
I wonder why they would target you with such things.
Let's see.
Now, excuse me while I look up Pumping Iron 2.
Yeah.
Join now for free. Hang on. All right. Yeah, go on.
So... But yeah, this one's kind of considered to be one of the best Bond films. You know, it's usually on the short list of the best. And I watched these movies all the time on television when I was a kid, but this wasn't one of the ones I would see a lot on TV for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys had that experience.
This is one I saw on HBO in 1979 when they got the rights to run all the Bond movies. And they showed it uncut, so that the big fight between Connery and Robert Shaw on the train, when I watched it again on ABC when they ran it, because they wouldn't run this one too often. They'd run it like once every 2 years. They cut that entire fight scene out. The
really?
Entire fight. The entire
I,
fight
You know
scene.
What? I think I heard that because, I don't know, I feel like I heard someone mention that. And that seems like that would be such a... hole in the movie, because that's one of the coolest sequences in the film.
Yeah, no, it's great, and it was innovative at the time. Like, it was a big deal when this movie supposedly it wasn't a hit in the United States first time around, but after Goldfinger was a smash hit, they re-released Dr. No and From Russia with Love as a double feature, and that's when everybody saw them. And I was told that you know, young boys, when they saw From Russia with Love and saw that fight scene, it's like, wait, you're not supposed to be aiming there at a fight. You know, it was like dirty fighting the first time they'd seen it in a movie.
On the Australian VHS covers and DVD covers, there's a shot of that fight as the main picture on the front of the box. And the tagline says, we're going to need a bigger train.
Yeah, and the fights, and you know,
that, hey, they laughed. The writers are putting their thumbs up. I got a laugh out of Hunter for that one. So yeah, keep going, boys. You're doing all right.
But it was like it was unique because it was I think it was the longest fight scene filmed at that time for a movie.
Yeah, boy, doesn't it feel like it.
Well, and the action scenes in this movie for 1963 feel very drawn out, like the assault on the gypsy camp. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a big old shootout with like explosions and, you know, people running around gunning people. It felt very elaborate for the time. Like I was thinking, you didn't really see. I don't know. I could be wrong, but it felt especially chaotic for a early 60s, pre, like, you know, Peckinpah type movie.
Well, also, you have to remember that this is the last 007 movie that was believable, because it's really just a cloak and dagger story. And after this, you get to Goldfinger, it starts to get a little crazy. And
yeah, Guy Hamilton brings kind of a absurdity to it.
Right. Over the top.
Like, it didn't get insane. Guy Hamilton didn't get insane until Diamonds Are Forever, but Goldfinger has, like, I'm going to strap you to a table and, you know, have a slow moving laser.
Right. It has a lot of story holes. Like, that's the one that has Bond stupidity getting the women killed, and that it became tropes of the series, really. Just like, he's kind of an idiot.
Well, in this one, I thought that he was kind of dumb in some areas. Like, when Tatiana's just, he finds her, meets her for the first time, and she's in bed ready to get it on. And right. he just hops into bed with her. And I was like, what? A spy. I'd go, okay, when do people run in and shoot me?
I'll argue that.
Establish that he's almost a near date rapist in Dr. No. So,
oh yeah.
I will argue the fact that if you're a spy and there's a naked woman in your bed, if they're going to kill you, they're going to kill you anyway, so you may as well go out the best way possible.
That's right.
Yeah.
I
agree.
Go out swinging.
I even thought that was kind of dark for a movie at the time, like people secretly filming them having sex and stuff like that.
That was actually dark. In fact, you notice in the finale, there seems to be a missing frames or something where...
Yeah, okay. Unpack that, because my wife had not seen this movie, and she was going, it seems like a scene is gone from this film.
Yeah, every version I've watched of it on a home video, I've always noticed that, and it's a really bad jump cut in, like, the old Laserdisc and the videotapes, and, like, I was like, well, what the hell happened there? And then for this new 4K remaster that's currently on Hulu and Amazon Prime, you know, they just kind of, they smoothed it over where it doesn't look like such a harsh jump, but it's still an obvious, something was cut, but I don't know what.
So at the end, Tatiana and Bond are in Venice, and they're in a boat together, and Bond pulls out the film that is made of them in the hotel room. And he kind of looks at it and he goes, you know what they'll say about this, right? And she's like, what? And then he just tosses it in the water and waves at it. It felt like there was a bit of dialogue, because the cut is so abrupt. It feels like something's missing. Like,
he'd say something like, my gun's too long or something. You know, who knows?
Yeah, it seems like some
carry-on joke or something. Yeah. You know?
By the way, this has some of the best little Bond innuendos in it. One of my favorites was... when M is listening to the recording of them talking, she's like, have you had lots of experiences with women? He's like, well, one time M and I got into an interesting situation in Tokyo, and it shuts it off.
Like when he's seen with the girlfriend from Dr. No.
Yeah, that was something I felt like they were trying to have Bond have this sort of like rich girlfriend.
Right.
That he would always be kind of cavorting with, you know.
But yeah, it actually feels like a sequel to Dr. No, whereas Goldfinger, it doesn't even feel like it's in the same universe.
Yeah.
But is the sequel as good as Quantum of Solace is to Casino Royale?
Oh, Lord.
That's a bad movie, that one.
Yeah.
Quantum of Solace is, I have like my short list of favorite Bond movies, and I have my short list of least favorite, and Quantum of Solace is on that short list of least favorite.
What's worse, Quantum of Solace or Diamonds Are Forever?
Diamonds Are Forever, I would say, might be at the very bottom, but at least there's some retarded fun things in it. There's some like there there's some really
Mr.
stupid
Wynn and Mr. Kid.
There's some really fun stupidity in it, like Mr. Wynn and Mr. Kid as these obviously homosexual killers, and Bambi and Thumper as these obviously lesbian killers, and just and like Bond riding around a moon buggy. It's so stupid, but it makes your head hurt. It's so dumb, but at least there's some entertainment value in that. Quantum of Solace,
it's not even fun to watch.
It's not. There is nothing. Like, the action scenes are terrible. Everything about it is just creaky. And the guy who directed it, Mark Forrester, that guy, he was talking in the press like he is, you know, God's gift to filmmaking that has, you know, blessed the Bond series with his genius. And it was just this sub. It was like he was doing a Paul Greengrass imitation.
I would say the only good thing about that film is the opening theme song with Jack White and Alicia Keys.
I didn't even like that.
Oh, I do. I think it's great.
Well, they fused a lot of left-wing politics into the screenplay.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
In a real annoying way. Like, it was super annoying, and it was just like, this isn't Fleming.
Of the day, like, it's stuff the left wouldn't do now.
Yeah.
But when they were out of power, they were, you know. Or I don't know if they were out of power at the time, but
it was because that stupid Scientologist rewrote this. He wrote half the script.
Paul Haggis, yeah,
yeah.
But I'll also say this about Diamonds Are Forever: it has a great theme song.
It does,
yeah.
That's does, yeah.
It has Jill St. John's ass too.
Oh, okay. Well, it definitely is better than Quantum of Solace now. That woman is fucking. Oh my god, Jesus.
Yeah, she's gorgeous in that movie.
Oh,
she's something else.
God. I think, I mean, I've seen plenty of good-looking women. Jill St. John is, my God. And Jane Seymour as well.
Yeah. Love and Let Die. She's beautiful.
Ties into Stacey Keach as well.
Yeah, that's true.
From last week's episode.
Well, I want to point out that Jane Seymour is Stacey Keach's sister-in-law. Or was.
Yep.
And she was in Live and Let Die, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, she's actually reveals more than she did in Live and Let Die, and that's a G-rated movie.
I'm going to say, too, this movie also has some, gets pretty racy with its, you know, the amount it shows, like when Tatiana, when he's looking at her through the window, it's pretty, you know, I'm like, oh, that's a naked person right there.
Yep. Yeah.
It was popular with young boys at the time because they sold a kid's spy kit based on the briefcase in this movie with the attachment gun.
I was going to say, too, the briefcase in this movie is one of my all-time favorite Bond gadgets.
Yeah.
Because it is so utilitarian and it does so much. It's got a sniper gun in it. It's got the talcum powder explosion. You know, it's just, it's got all this money inside of it. It's just, it has so many uses and it's practical. It's, a lot of the Bond gadgets are sort of silly and absurd. They get really ridiculous.
You mean like a watch shooting darts is completely impractical?
Yeah. But in this movie, the gadget felt like something. I was like, yeah, if I was a spy, I would want that, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's this is the last one you can say is a real cloak and dagger movie. Because after this, it becomes Bond stops some megalomaniac from doing something to the world.
Right. Because this is just a spy game. It's not, there's no, if Bond loses, there's no, you know, major geopolitical problem. I mean, there is some, you know, we are playing the Russians and the British against each other, but there's no, you know, the world's not going to explode.
Right.
Bond loses. There isn't that much at stake. In fact, the biggest thing that's at stake is his reputation, because they're going to make it look like he committed murder-suicide.
And I always said if they really wanted to reboot the 007 movie series, that go back to the Cloak and Dagger stories that are closer to the Fleming books, like this one, instead of trying to do, oh, I'm going to, you know, shoot the moon with a laser or some stupid shit.
I also like how it has some of those like 60s TV tropes, like the gypsy wrestling scene, which feels straight out of Star Trek almost.
Remember, it was before Star Trek.
Oh, I know, it's before Star Trek, for sure.
And Terrence Young loved his catfights. Because he did a movie called something like Battle of the Amazons or something. He did a movie in, like, I think it was called War God. That might be the real title of it. But it came out in, like, the early 70s, and it's just it's Amazons battling in the peplum, and it's just, like, cat fight heaven for people who are into that fetish.
I feel like Gene Roddenberry pushed the gender egalitarianism in Star Trek, not because he was an egalitarian, but because he wanted to see women fight each other.
He was a horny bastard. Every book about Roddenberry reveals he was just a horny lunatic. Like, he'd had Majel Barrett, like, you know, answer the door for writers in a nude or something and play a gag on him and shit. It was just kind of crazy shit.
Dirty
old man, basically.
Yeah. When you watch season one of Star Trek, The Next Generation is fascinating because the show can't figure out what it wants to be. But there's episodes with, like, women fighting each other in arenas, and I'm like, that's when Roddenberry was on the set.
That's what he said. I gotta have a cat fight. That's the ratings.
Tasha Yar is gonna get down there and fight. And
right. And what, another thing I noticed is, like, Connery's rug in this one is perfect. Why didn't he use this rug for the later movies?
No, because I was telling my wife, that's a toupee. That's not his hair, but it looks good, you know? It's funny, though. Every time I watch these movies, I can see more Austin Powers gags. Like, I never really quite picked up that Austin's chest hair is making fun of Sean Connery.
I didn't even realize that. That's true, yeah, though.
My wife goes, he's so hairy. She goes, is that what Austin Powers is referring to? And I went, oh, yeah, probably.
Most
yeah,
likely.
It's crazy for that. It's got the Lottie Linya Rosa Klebb character was done in the Austin Powers movies.
Oh, yeah, and Austin Powers movies. Diamonds Are Forever did this, too. But they did the very end where the henchman is going to assassinate them in the hotel room after they've won.
Yeah.
You know, disguised as a maid.
Right.
That was a cool thing, too. I always liked the poison knife in the boot. I always thought that was really scary.
Like, well, it's just basic seemed like, and believable. It's completely believable compared to, like, later stuff where, you know, stuff in the Roger Moore Bond movies or the Brosnan Bond movies where nothing's believable at all.
Right, and... You know, and I've said this on previous shows that the Bond films to me feel like men's magazines a little bit. And what, you know, you've got your fashion with what he's wearing. You've got beautiful girls. You've got
the liquor.
You've got got food and drink. You have cool cars. You've got exotic locations. Here you have Istanbul. You've got, the various countryside locations, gypsies, et cetera. And you've got, cool gadgets. And later Bond movies, they figured out how to brand that stuff.
Yeah.
Sort of make it, okay, Bond's got Omega watches, you know, he's driving BMW, or Aston Martin. But you know, with some of the more absurd ones, it gets hard because there's nothing like real world tangible about the stuff he's got. Like, they just feel like they're gags, like the gadgets and stuff like that. Yeah. But I do love Desmond Llewellyn as Q. And I always loved him and Bond's sort of, you know, repartee. It's not really too present here, but it, you know, you get the beginnings of their relationship.
Yeah, you do. And he sadly went out the way he went out. In real life.
Yeah, I know. I was talking about that the other day, how I remember reading in the newspaper back when newspapers were a common thing that he died in a car wreck. And I was going, oh, man, you know, because I had just seen The World Is Not Enough and he had kind of given his goodbye in that movie.
Which is odd.
He died in a car wreck.
When you watch that film, as bad as it is, you get the idea that Q is giving it away and John Cleese's character of, what was it?
R,
I think it was, yeah, was going to be taken over. And then, of course, Desmond Llewellyn passed away in real life not long after. So, kind of odd. It was kind of a weird sort of thing that was.
Yeah, it's strange and sad.
Very sad, yeah.
You know, who, you know, the most consistent thing of the first 30 years of Bond is always Q. So, and Desmond Llewellyn, or, you know, it's just, it's unfortunate. In fact, when I would watch the Craig movies, I keep thinking, oh, when's old Q going to show up? And of course, they have the young guy as Q now. So
now they get the old M instead, Judy Dench.
Yeah.
So
yeah, who plays Q in the new ones? It's
some young actor, but it's I mean, the guy does a decent job.
Ben Whishaw, that's his name. Yeah.
The problem with those movies is those scripts. You know, they've only made two good Craigs and two bad ones. So
yeah, I thought Spectre's opening was terrific, and then it was all just after that.
Shit,
I don't think Spectre was as bad as people made out, but it wasn't as good as Skyfall. No way.
One of the problems with it was that it was too freaking long.
They need to cut out that shit of making it 2 hours and 25. It doesn't need to be 2 hours tops for a Bond film. That'll do you.
Yeah, I think a Bond movie's standard running time is 2 hours, and it shouldn't be longer than that.
2 hours comes out every 2 years, and it doesn't have to have major continuity pieces about his character in every film.
We don't need to
which is something they're doing now. That's a reflection of comic book movies.
We don't need to go to seven or eight different locations. It doesn't need to be that way. I mean, Live and Let Die primarily set in Jamaica?
Well, and Dr. No, it was just Jamaica.
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Live and Let Die was Haiti? Or?
Oh, Haiti.
No,
yes.
It was Haiti, Louisiana. New Orleans, New York, and Harlem. They were in Harlem,
too. It was
too,
pre-Clinton Haiti, it was.
Yeah, that was Voodoo. That was the Voodoo Bond movie, the Blaxploitation Bond movie.
Yeah.
But you know, Dr. No, it was just Jamaica.
Yeah.
And Dr. No is a really terrific movie, I think.
Yeah, our manager, Winston Humphrey, told me before I speak to him that that's his favorite Bond movie, Dr. No.
Well, he was actually in it as a young boy, you know, in the background on the docks running around. Winston told me that.
Yeah, he said that was the last time he ever ran around as well.
Well, Winston was behind the scenes. He was kind of slinging hashish to the crew.
don't tell the Kingston police that.
Well, I know. Don't tell the Kingston police, but the statute of limitations is passed on this, so I think it's okay. I don't know the law in Jamaica, but Winston Humphrey was also trying to evangelize the glory of Selassie to the Dr. No. And, you know, he got some converts. I mean, there's some white Britons that stayed and are part of, the Rastafarian religion.
Yeah.
You know, after making Dr. No.
They have a thing called a sleep-in every year. It starts at January 1st and ends December 31st. And he started all over again.
One of Winston's customers was actually Jack Lord.
That's why when he was offered Star Trek, he wanted half the show.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's right. And also was the other one was Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys.
Right.
Winston told me that he, Dennis got some stuff off him and promised he'd pay him back. He went for a swim and never paid him back. So he's still filthy.
Exactly.
He's wondering where he is. I said, look, I don't think he's coming back.
Winston said, well, don't tell the Kingston police that I had this deal with him, you know.
It involved a speedboat motor.
Yeah.
Okay, so, from Russia with Love, let me give my thoughts on this one. I'm going to say that I rewatched it again last night, and it was okay. It was not as good as I remember it, actually. I think of all the Bonds that I have seen with which are all the Bond Connery ones, it's kind of down there with Diamonds Are Forever. Not as bad, mind you, but I prefer, like I said, You Only Live Twice. That's probably my favorite of them, and Dr. No. I don't know, it was okay. It didn't really grab me again.
I got to say, when I was a kid, I preferred sort of the bigger Bond excursions of Roger Moore to movies like this one. But watching this one again, I really, you know, every time I watch this one, it gets better for me. I just think it's just such a terrific adventure movie and just lots of fun. It has some silly stuff in it, but none of it, it just adds to the, you know.
Who sang the theme song? Was it Vaughn Monroe?
It's Matt Monro.
Oh, Matt Monro. My apologies. Yeah. Great
and
song.
You didn't quite have the Bond opening credits yet. I mean, it did have the, you know, the girl dancing and the stuff projection, but you didn't have the opening song. It wasn't totally a Bond thing yet.
They weren't sold on that. Then this, people forget the first two Bond movies were not these big monster box office hits. They weren't even released all over the U.S.
They were in the U.K. Dr. No was fucking massive in the U.K.
Yeah, it did very well in the U.K. and Europe, where Fleming's novels were actually bestsellers. Bond wasn't well known in America until JFK said his favorite things to read was Ian Fleming's James Bond novels, and suddenly sales shot through the roof and Goldfinger did massive business when it came out.
Didn't JFK say, oh, I went to go see From Russia with Love in the theater? Didn't that sort of...
Possibly, but he was reading the novels, and the first two books are closer to, or the first two movies are closer to the books than what they later became. From Russia with Love changes one major thing, and the novel, from what I remember, it was actually SMERSH, the Russian organization that was doing the whole thing. It was an anti-Russian novel. It was Cold War. And what they did was the film producers wanted to get this released in the Soviet Union, so they changed it to Spectre. As manipulating the whole thing,
which is a Fleming creation, but
depending if you ask Kevin McClory.
But I was going to say the reason Spectre stopped being in the movies was because of the Kevin McClory debacle, which was over Thunderball.
Yeah,
which would be a thorn in the side of this series for a long time. I got to say though, Terrence Young, you know, he directed three Bond films. He directed Dr. No, which is a classic, From Russia with Love, which is a classic, Thunderball, which is thought of as a classic. I actually think Thunderball is kind of a piece of crap.
Boring.
It drags. It's dull.
It looks crappy. I mean, this movie and Dr. No both look awesome to me. The Thunderball, I mean, the underwater cinematography is pretty good, but the boat fight scene
is
I can't believe that was put into a major motion picture.
I think it was a rush job. I really think that movie was a rush job.
Okay, listen, I'll in defense of Thunderball with one thing. If you see it on the big screen, it improves it somewhat. It's still not a great film, but that's one of the films that really benefits from the big screen experience.
The back projection in the boat fight scene is so bad. It almost like...
Yeah, it's not great.
I saw it as a midnight movie at a local cinema, and they had on their big screen, they showed one Bond movie, and they showed Thunderball for some reason, and we were laughing at the projection thing in the end.
That boat runs aground 1,500 times in every shot.
Yeah.
Yet still manages to keep going as fast as the Starship Enterprise. But just something about Thunderball. I think it was because of the McClory thing. They maybe cheaped out on it, but it ended up making a boatload of cash. But
well, McClory worked on it and worked with them.
Yeah, he has credit on it,
right? And he, but he insisted that he created Spectre and Blofeld with Fleming when Thunderball was originally written as an original movie screenplay in the 50s before Bond's film rights had even been sold, because McClory was like, hey, maybe we should do a movie script with your character. And then Fleming novelized it, but made it look like he wrote the whole thing.
He didn't give them credit.
And that's what started the problem. And then so McClory always had the rights to remake Thunderball if he could pull it together, but he couldn't do any other Bond movies.
Anytime they used Blofeld or anything like that, he would sue them.
Yeah. Claiming he created Blofeld. But what they did was, what they did here was roping Inspector just so they could get a theatrical release in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, they didn't want it to appear anti-Russian. In later films, you know, Bond is sort of fighting the Soviets a lot.
Right, because those weren't getting released. The Soviets were probably like, we will not have the Western imperialistic film release.
We do not want this degenerate womanizer.
Right. Bond represents Western civilization.
Western values, consumerism.
Capitalism, you know. But if you read the old Fleming novels, here's the funny thing. The Fleming books, if you read them, he's always talking about what Bond's drinking, the brand of clothing he's wearing, all that stuff. It's like the invention of product placement is in those Fleming novels in the 50s.
Well, and it's that whole, like, what's Bond wearing? What's he driving? Like, right. How's he carrying himself? There's a fashion men's element to it that it's meant to appeal to men's, you know, more refined sensibilities. And also they're more degenerate sensibilities too.
Right, right. He's a bit of a fussy snob in the books too, which some of that comes off in the films. But Connery is not really playing Fleming's Bond. He's playing Terrence Young.
Yeah, Terrence Young. Bond is more of a complex character in the books a little bit. Terrence Young was like, you know, be cool, be suave, you know.
Wearing that hat, you know, drinking martinis.
By the way, speaking of hats, one of the most hilarious things in this movie is that when Bond gets on the boat, he puts on a captain's hat. he's on that boat. He found a captain's hat and put it on. Felt it was appropriate.
I always thought that was hilarious. Like, there's always those weird little things that I notice. And just some of the whole thing when Red Grant, I think he's just called Grant in the movie, when he's using that kind of working class British talk with Bond, because he's an Irishman impersonating an English agent.
My wife was going, "What's up with his voice?"
Yeah, and then Bond says, "What does he say?" Is like, "Oh, boys, they're calling each other smush these days." You know, it's because the character's supposed to be Irish, so a lot of that stuff is lost.
Well, and I noticed the helicopter attack scene. It looked like the IRA was coming for Bond. Like.
But I liked Robert Shaw as the villain, and I thought Red Grant looked like a pretty good match for Bond.
Red Grant is kind of the template for the Bond henchman, you know,
Tough guy.
Yeah, he's really tough. He's kind of a comic book character with that blonde hair and that barrel chest, you know. And of course, with Goldfinger, it gets absurd with Oddjob, but But you know, I like Goldfinger a lot more than John does. I think it's a fun movie, but you know, it's if you like the more stripped down spy novel elements of Bond, you're going to get more of a science fiction movie with the guy.
Well, I can understand why they changed it in the movie, because the Goldfinger novel is pretty boring. Like, there's a golf game that just goes on forever.
You want a Bond novel that's radically different? The Spy Who Loved Me is this weird, boring women's romance novel.
Is it?
The movie's this big epic.
The movie's a great improvement over the novel, which is
it is an adaptation in title only. There is no
Fleming insisted on it. He hated the novel.
The novel it's the novel's terrible. It's a book for women.
Yeah,
it's from the point of view of a girl who encounters James Bond at a motel. And some like crazed killers show up and he saves her and like makes love to her and leaves, you know?
Right.
What's wrong? Yeah, that sounds like a good day out.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it was insisted that the movie be different. And I get it. And I also like that the movies are different from the books, because at least I can go back and reread the books and not feel like, oh God, I've seen the movie 100 times. I can't read this.
Exactly. No, the books are kind of their own thing and the movies are their own thing, and that's okay, you know.
Yeah. And I like that Connery's Bond is based on Terrence Young. I think that works really well. Yeah. To see him swigging bourbon in the movies probably wouldn't have made much sense in 1963 for a British thriller.
No, it's a little more, you know, kind of cool for the day. And
yeah.
And but even the different actors who play Bond, they bring their own stuff to it, like you know, what was it? You know, like Roger Moore, you know, when he's like smacking women around, it doesn't work the way it works with Connery, you know?
No, because it's totally believable, Connery, because we know Connery does it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's by coincidence, he retired long before all this pound Me Too business started up. And I almost think if he was still active, he would totally be top of the list on all that, because I've heard way too many stories about him behind the scenes.
Interesting.
Oh yeah, he's like, you know, he's walking. He's not far removed from the Bond he plays in those early films.
So, you know, there's one thing though. You know, this is Sean Connery as Bond, and the last time he played Bond was in Diamonds Are Forever. Well, actually,
no, Never Say Never.
We'll never say never again.
Yeah. The remake of Thunderball.
In an official Bond film.
That's strangest thing, he was in better shape and had a better wig than he did in Diamonds Are Forever.
But he actually, Diamonds Are Forever. He was
fat.
He didn't want to be doing it.
And he looked 60.
But there is actually a I remember back in 2005, there was a From Russia with Love video game that came out where Sean Connery came back to play the voice of Bond for the game. I don't know if any of you ever saw that, but that was a pretty cool game. It was for PS2 and Xbox and GameCube.
Oh, the only game I've ever played of Bond was...
GoldenEye?
No. I didn't play the... I think it was Quantum of Solace. Was the actual video game was better than the movie.
Yeah, there was a Quantum of Solace video game.
Yeah.
But, you know, James Bond's video game history is pretty interesting because the GoldenEye game for the Nintendo 64 was the first great first-person shooter for a console. You know, because before that, first-person shooter games were a PC thing. You know, if you got a first-person shooter on a console, it was usually an inferior port of a PC game. But GoldenEye was a console exclusive, and it was awesome. And people were playing multiplayer at each other's homes with it. But From Russia with Love was kind of a different take on Bond and video games. It was a third-person game, and Sean Connery's likeness was used very throughout. But he came back and did the voice for it. So that's a pretty – if you're a fan of this movie, that's a cool game to get. You can probably get it for really cheap if you have a PS2 or a GameCube or an Xbox. I think it's on PSP as well.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty fun game, and it has a lot of stuff from the other games, like you can use the jetpack from Thunderball in it and stuff like that. So it's a pretty neat game, and it's cool to have Connery doing the voice of Bond again.
Yeah, I'd read about that was his last appearance as the character was doing, and it's all new dialogue, I'm guessing.
No, they didn't just reuse old audio. It's brand new.
Wow.
Because he's like talking while you're playing and stuff like that. And, you know, it takes like little bits from the movie and makes like kind of more elaborate levels out of them and stuff like that.
Huh. I never cared much for video games.
Mm-hmm. I actually, and you know, because the McClory lawsuit was still going on, Spectre is called Octopus.
Oh, my goodness.
They changed some key elements because they couldn't use them because the McClory thing. McClory died in 2007. But the lawsuit was still going on, and they didn't use it. So it's going on.
Quantum of Solace establish that the Quantum organization had an octopus for their symbol or something?
Yes, they were kind of prepping to bring back Spectre, but yeah, it was like they couldn't do it yet. You know, but
yeah, the rumor was there was a hot rumor going around that Al Pacino was going to be Blofeld.
But then, Inglourious Bastards happened, and we had to get
right. That we had to get Christoph Waltz, who is really inappropriate as Blofeld.
Yeah, he was terrible as Blofeld.
The idea of Blofeld, this is where they get it wrong. Ian Fleming, I think, you know, in his claim that he created Blofeld, he realized that once Bond killed the henchman, the villain was nothing. It was always some egghead that he was going to have to kill. And so with Blofeld, he had somebody who could fight and think and come up with devious stuff. So he was almost like an evil alternate Bond or whatever, you know, like Bizarro Bond. And that's something they completely distort in the movies and twist around by having like Donald Pleasance play him and being all like a little slime ball, and then Charles Gray play him and he's like really gay and everything. You know, Max von Sydow in Never Say Never Again kind of gets it right, but Telly Savalas is the closest you really get to what Blofeld is supposed to be.
Yeah, because, I mean, who loves you, baby? Well,
yeah.
But, Christoph Waltz was just wrong for that role. It was one of those, it felt like fan casting. Like when
not only that, it had fan plotting with the, I'm your adopted brother. And
Yeah.
You know, that suddenly the Rick Moranis dark helmet gag in Spaceballs, I'm your brother's former roommate thing, or brother's cousin's former roommate, or whatever that joke is suddenly not a joke anymore. Because
their connection, Bond's connection with Blofeld felt similarly tenuous and, like, you know, just distant and weird. And it's like, I'm your adopted brother, sort of. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's like, cuckoo. I was cucked or something. I don't know. It's weird. Yeah.
Apparently, the original script, he was his brother. Like,
that's even worse.
A script leaked out early, and, you know, along with all those Idris Elba is going to play 007 rumors.
Which those rumors are like, you know, they flare up every.
Because they're clickbait. I remember in the 90s when it was Wesley Snipes is going to play Bond. Sharon Stone will play Bond.
Yeah, the BBC just posted an article saying 63% of Americans want Idris Elba to play Bond. I was like, how do they come up with this number? 60? What polling is that? Is that like one of those Drudge polls where just boomers click what they want every time they refresh the page?
They pull it out of their ass. That's all it is. It's just like the female Doctor Who. They just pull it. The BBC just pulls stuff out of their ass.
I see normies making fun of that on Facebook. Like that new season of Doctor Who is not going over well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like you know, people have watched it and they said, "Wait a minute, this Doctor doesn't even know who Rosa Parks is, does it?" It's like the character of the Doctor always knew history. That was the point, you know. Well, it's like maybe the young companions didn't know history, but the Doctor did. But oh yeah. Well, nice going, BBC. You fucked everything up.
As usual.
Joining Silicon Valley and trying to cuck out the world of pop culture. Yeah. Nice going, dicks.
They're trying to reset everything.
Yeah, it's not working at all. That's why we go back. We watch old sexist movies like From Russia with Love.
Why do you think they want to kill Filmstruck? You know, it's not because of money. It's because they want to destroy the old movies and replace them with the new ones. You know,
no, Eat, Pray, Love is the classic you should be watching. Not Bringing Up Baby.
Exactly.
You know, that's how these fuckers are working.
I'm just going to go watch my Thing from Another World Blu-ray then. Heck yeah. I wanted to get the new Blu-ray of Xia Q's, the Abel Gance silent World War One film.
Because God knows your shelf was missing that.
I was, and I was...
How can you wear your smoking jacket with any confidence if you don't have that on your shelf?
I was going to, you know, smoke my pipe of tobacco with, you know, while watching it. But I was trying to find it and I couldn't find it anywhere. And then I found out it was MOD on their website. And that's why I was
Okay,
that's why I couldn't find it.
That's weird because I have like an Olean Johnson comedy from VCI that I bought and it came out like 2004 and my DVD player wouldn't play it. And then I ejected it, or one of my many DVD players wouldn't play it. And then I ejected it. Look at it. It was a burn. It was like a burn-on-demand thing.
Oh, interesting. I think VCI is one of those companies that might have...
They're doing that. They do that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I think they do tell you this is a DVD-R on their website. Well, they're just selling to movie buffs, and this stuff isn't going to get into Walmart, so you can't really fault them. They don't want to pay a manufacturing house to press a bunch.
Some of those Warner Archive releases will say this may not play in these type of players, you know?
Right. And a lot of people are bitchy about it. And particularly the movie nerds, it's like, well, you guys killed it when you did Netflix and you rented all the cult movies from Netflix and you didn't buy them. So that's what's kind of driven the business to that. I hate to say it, even though I did it too. But
yeah, absolutely. You know,
if you sit there and you don't buy what they release and you just rent it, well, they don't get the money and it's going to become a boutique label thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where physical media is at this point. It's all boutique stuff.
Very much so, you know. I just noticed Rhino put out the Montrose first album in a special edition, and I'm like,
ooh, nice.
That's I may have to order that.
Yeah, that's a good album.
Yeah, great heavy metal record.
Well, so, Stu, I think you're a little cooler on From Russia with Love. Why don't you give us your rating on it?
Four? No, I'm just joking. No, honestly, like about... I toyed with the idea of giving it a 7, but I just can't. I think 6.5 is about as much as I can do. Like I said, I'm just... I don't know what it was. It didn't really resonate with me this time around. I mean, I watched Dr. No. Oh, maybe about 6 months
back.
You
like Dr. No, but you don't like this one as much.
No. And like I said, Dr. No is just as old, and I still enjoyed the hell out of it. But
what's missing from this one, do you think?
It just seemed a lot more glum, a lot more darker.
And you like the more kind of.
And I'm kind
This is not me because I like this side of Bond too. The more fantastical side of it, maybe.
I like the more visual side of it, and From Russia with Love is not a very visual movie. It's very dark, as in I'm looking dark looking, not dark tone.
Well, I thought it was pretty visually rich. I mean, I love the Istanbul locations with the Hagia Sophia. And I love the the helicopter scenes, exciting, the kind of remake of the North by Northwest.
Yeah, sequence. But I like the...
And the Spectre training grounds.
The Spectre training grounds is straight out of a comic book. I love that. It's so absurd.
Well, you know what inspired that scene? Of course, it's been duplicated in every Bond movie since, except for MI5, but it was the training scene in Spartacus.
Oh, interesting. That makes
sense. Cubby Broccoli saw Spartacus, he loved the training ground scene so much, he wanted that in From Russia with Love.
I was like, this feels like a comic book right here, you know? Yeah. Not this new Marvel crap. That feels like something straight out of like a Jim Steranko comic or something.
Which became a Wayne's World joke where he says, I've always wanted to open up the door to where people are training to kill other people like a James Bond movie.
And they're shooting guns and wearing no ear protection.
Yeah. Always.
And like firing flamethrowers and doing karate. Yeah.
They're like a foot away from the guys doing judo and karate and stuff.
Well, and I also, too, I love that little opening where Grant is Chase stalking Bond and he kills him and then the mask comes off, you know?
Yeah. That's first rubber mask pull off in a movie, too.
Yeah, it's you watch Get Smart and they clown on that all the time.
Oh, totally. But, yeah. But what I'm getting at,
fake out opening though.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm getting at with what I was saying about the look of it, it wasn't strikingly as beautiful as say Dr. No, with the Jamaican beaches and the water and all that stuff.
I love the locations of Dr. No. So
well, that's because Jamaica is simply just a better looking country, at least than Turkey or England or wherever else they filmed this thing.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I like those sort of rich sceneries. Even though I did say earlier on, I'm sort of contradicting myself when I said that, I don't like it when there's too many locations. But, Dr. No, set in Jamaica, it's good. Pretty to look at. Makes me want to go there and visit our manager. But, the crime in Jamaica.
Yeah, it's pretty off the charts. They don't tell you that in the... Carnival Cruise ads.
Just show all the big-breasted, Jamaican girls in Next to Nothing. So, horny old cunts like me just want to fucking go there. But you don't really think about the other shit that goes on.
Yeah, it's like robbery central, and if you're a woman, it's other crimes.
So what do you give From Russia with Love, John?
I give it a 9 because it's one of my favorites of the series, which is still Honor Majesty's Secret Service, probably my all-time favorite Bond movie, but I think this is the top. It's the best one Connery did. I guess the next one would probably be The Spy Who Loved Me. But it holds up on every viewing. I always enjoy it more and more each time. And I always love the trivia fact that apparently the same actress that dubbed Ursula Andress in Dr. No also dubbed Daniela Bianchi in this. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, people forget how much like performances were dubbed back then, especially if you had an actress or actor that didn't speak English too well.
It becomes really obvious when you watch these on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I watch so many classic movies on Blu-ray now, and I notice so many little instances of dubbing, and some of it's ADR, but some of it you're like, wait.
I want to ask you, does that detract having it in such a high definition where it's so clear?
Sometimes it can. For some movies, it doesn't work out for the best.
Johnny Ray Gasca had said that he does not enjoy watching Shaw Brothers movies on Blu-ray because you see the wires, you see the wig glue, you see, how cheap. So, some problems with the sets are way more apparent.
I've got to totally agree. I don't enjoy watching Shaw Brothers movies on Blu-ray or DVD or VHS.
Well, of course, because you've seen what, 2? So
yeah,
that's 2 too many sometimes.
but for me, I think this is a 10 out of 10. It has stuff that I think is silly and whatever, but that just adds to it. I think it's a terrific adventure movie. It's got fun cloak and dagger elements, but it's also got like awesome action scenes, cool cars. Great suits. Connery is cool as heck,
Yeah, he was never cooler than he was in this.
Daniela Bianchi is smoking hot.
She's gorgeous.
The locations are cool. The gadgets are cool. Robert Shaw rules. I mean, he's one of the best Bond henchmen ever. And, it's just a It's just a rad time.
And Lottie Linya.
Yes.
Infamous of Mac the Knife lyrics, you know.
It's one of the definitive Bond pictures. And, you know, it doesn't have a lot of the bigger elements that come into play later, but that kind of adds to it. It makes it more unique in the series.
It's the last believable Bond movie, too.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's. I'm not saying it's like some John Le Carré thriller or something, but it's closer to that territory than, you know, what Goldfinger started to take the series into.
Exactly. So you know, it the fact that it's scaled back a bit from what would come later makes it gives it more of a unique feel in the Bond canon that, you know, a lot of later entries would try to get back to, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's my thought. I give it a 10 out of 10.
The two Dalton Bonds really tried to take it back to this.
Oh yeah, they have, but like Dalton was like, Bond needs to smoke.
Right. But the problem was they started angling back to that. We got to have big explosions, and whenever they think that's what hurt those stories. And oh, we got to have, you know, Wayne Newton as a preacher.
I've said forever, Timothy Dalton's my favorite Bond, and The Living Daylights is my favorite Bond movie.
Well, Living Daylights for me is fucking up there awesome. On my favorite Bond movies.
It's good. It's in my top. It's awesome. My top 15 or 12.
I even like the stupidity of License to Kill. It's a dumb as fuck movie, but it's...
You know, I have not seen License to Kill since I was a kid. I need to go back and watch it because everybody tells me they think it's a lesser Bond film, but you know, I still need to go back and watch it.
Yeah,
it has problems, but I've always seen that as a movie that would have been greatly improved with about 30 minutes cut out of it.
What, it also gave us Sanchez.
Yeah. Well, it has something that really always bugged me about those movies is a certain lack of humanity in a lot of the later Bond movies. Bond, after he kills or after the Tatiana kills Rosa Klebb in From Russia with Love, he's all sweaty and exhausted. Like, and he's a little worked up because there's just been a death. And like in License to Kill, as you know, in the beginning of the movie, Felix Leiter's fiance, or actually wife, is killed on their honeymoon and brutalized or whatever. And by the end of the film, Bond calls him up in his hospital room and he's got a nurse in his lap. He's, hey, James, how's it going? Like nothing happened.
You know, that's a problem that, you know, my wife has with these movies is she thinks women are pretty and my wife is no like feminist by any means. And she's like, right. Women seem kind of disposable in these movies. You know?
They became more and more disposable later on. It's weird.
I like the end of, what is it? The World Is Not Enough. When it's like Christmas only comes once a year. Or,
God, I hate that. You know what made that one worse was finding out Celia Ward was fired from the film because she was too old to be a Bond girl. She was like 34.
Oh, that's terrible.
And she's way better looking and more like a woman that needed to be a Bond girl than, you know, whatever her name was, Mrs. Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Denise Richards. Yeah, she couldn't act her way out of a paper bag.
Oh, God, and that dumb smile she has and her acting.
I remember the moment she came into that movie, I was like, what is she doing here?
Yeah, it just goes completely out the door.
I knew who she was, and I knew she was terrible as an actress. And I just, the moment she stepped onto screen when I saw it in the theater, I went, oh, here we go.
And she's playing like a nuclear scientist.
Yeah, I know, Christmas Jones.
Oh, God, that's nearly as bad as that young lady playing a FBI agent in that Rocky and Bullwinkle movie with Dickhead De Niro.
Yeah.
She's like about 19. She's in the FBI. I don't think so.
Yeah. It's just, you know, the Brosnan movies I hate. Like, it's easy to say that I could put all of them in my least favorite Bonds, and they'd only be topped by Quantum and A View to a Kill, and there's probably Diamonds Are Forever.
A View to a Kill is... that one I have trouble sitting. Like anytime I try to watch it, just for fun,
it's excruciating. It's like, but the Brosnan ones, I don't know. That's just like a different series to me.
A View to a Kill. We watched as a school excursion.
I still love GoldenEye. Because that was kind of my introduction to the series. So, and the video game was huge as a kid. So
I think you like the video game more than the movie.
Oh, the video, you know,
because I went to see the movie. There was all the hype. Oh, they brought Bond back and all that. And I'm just like, I wish Dalton had done a few more you know, in the last 5 years, instead of, you know, suddenly a long delay and then Brosnan making a slam against Dalton in the trailer, which I didn't care for. And then I went to see the movie, and then Garrow was like, because I was living in Boston at the time, Garrow was like, hey, how was it? And I went, it wasn't that good. I was like, it just was. It just seemed to go on and on, and
Golden
it just didn't really.
I like Golden
and,
Eye.
And you are very likely correct when you say I like the video game more than the movie, because the video game, my love of the game, probably informs my love of the movie. So
yeah, and I just thought Brosnan is too much of a priss when he plays Bond. It's funny, when I saw the Thomas Crown Affair, the John McTiernan remake, I thought this is pretty good, and it's like, why doesn't he act like this in the Bond movies? It's a totally different performance from him, and it's an adult. It's a thriller for adults. Oh my god!
Well, and
it's,
I remember
everything the Bond movies are supposed to be. They're not. They're for kids, and it's like, this is like a thriller for adults. This is what we need.
I remember, Brosnan was kind of slagging off the Dalton films as too politically correct, but his Bond was way more politically correct.
He didn't smoke. He was super PC. It was really annoying.
I mean, it wasn't like an SJW, but there was nothing offensive about him at all.
A female M that was slamming him as a Cold War dinosaur, as if, you know, as if he'd been an adventurer since the 60s or something. And it's like, no, that's not the approach to take.
Yeah, plus Dalton didn't make a movie as bad as Die Another Day, which was
Die Another Day is. That's one of those cartoonishly bad ones.
That's awful.
I'm Mr. Kill. Well, there's a name to die for.
And I really think Bruce J. Freeman was the worst screenwriter who came up with all the gags and jokes. I think Purvis and Wade come up with the plots. He came up with all the humor, and it's too New York American.
The only thing Die Another Day did that was good was give us Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Because that era of Bond with Brosnan had to die.
Yeah.
It was painful. And it was just terrible. Casino Royale, when I saw that in the theaters, like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it brought credibility back to Bond.
Then I went and watched Quantum of Solace, and I went, holy shit, for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah,
the credibility went out the
door. The other shoe dropped pretty darn fast.
Yeah, credibility forgotten right away.
Yeah.
Skyfall, oh, it's back, okay. Spectre. I see the push-pull game they're playing here.
It's become the original run of Star Trek movies at this point.
Yeah, it's become the bipolar Bond series. You know, it's one good, one bad. You never know what you're going to get half the time. So hopefully with this one being now the fifth one with Daniel Craig, we make it another good one.
Yeah.
Don't know who's directing it.
No, Sam Mendes this time, hopefully.
No, they got some TV director, some guy who directed True Detective.
Funkanaga, what's his name?
He was a replacement for Danny Boyle, but supposedly that was a relief because Danny Boyle, I guess, was going to do a real massive SJW Bond with a
I do not trust Danny Boyle with James Bond. And I say that as I like a lot of Danny Boyle movies. I do not want him touching James Bond.
I really wish we could go back to a Terrence Young standard where you could only use a war veteran who had commanded a tank, because Terrence Young was a tank commander in World War II, and I'd rather have somebody who's actually seen combat direct one of these than just some nerd.
I want to ask you boys something real quick. And I don't know if you brought it up on the last Bond one you did. If you could pick any filmmaker to have made a Bond who never did, who would you have picked? Doesn't matter if it was out of the time period. Just, you know, you've got a pool of filmmakers you can pick from.
That's a good question. It's almost one like I'd have to go away and think about.
I think Hitchcock would have made a good one. Yeah, Hitchcock. I would have picked William Friedkin, actually, when he was.
I think Hitchcock, like, his style kind of greatly informed James Bond.
He tried to do From Russia with Love in the 50s. He considered it.
Well, and he was. I think he was even shown the Fleming McClory script.
Yeah, he had considered it because it was probably one of those series of novels that everybody in Hollywood was reading. Like, how can we maybe adapt this into a thriller in Hollywood in the 50s. And I think Hitchcock wanted to do it, and he wanted Cary Grant as Bond, which would have been Fleming's choice too, I'm sure. And Cary Grant would have had to use an English accent, which would have been, you know, you'd have to go back to that instead of that mid-Atlantic he always used.
I think I think that could have done a good Cloak and Dagger Bond would be Carol Reed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Awesome was.
Because he did, Carol Reed did very good location spy movies like The Third Man, Night Train to Munich, mm-hmm. stuff like that. I think kind of has a pre-Bond feel to it that would have, I think he would have had some cool ideas.
I think Michael Curtiz would have made a good Bond in the 50s.
Oh, yeah. Michael Curtiz, you can plug him into anything. That guy
he would have done a good movie.
What about that guy who did Rio Bravo? What's his name? Howard Hawks.
Howard Hawks.
Howard Hawks is too American, I think.
Yeah, his attitude is very not English.
When I think about directors for Bond, you kind of have to have a little bit of a British sensibility to you. Like Carol Reed, you know, his movies have kind of a British sensibility. I think a director like Hawks, I think his movies are too rugged frontier.
All the women would be tougher than Bond and probably talking.
Exactly. I mean, and I think Hawks is a master of genre, you know, even like Curtiz, he's an American director, but he can kind of fit into anything. Hawks is a master of genre, but it has his stamp on it.
Yeah.
You know, Bond does not work with auteurs.
I would like
Hawks
to have seen. I'll tell you one British filmmaker who I would like to have seen do a Bond, say, in the 70s was Lindsay Anderson. It would have been really interesting to see that.
Oh, yeah, you never know.
Such a real different vision he has of stuff to see how he would have tackled a Bond script.
I would love to see Brian Clemens have written a Bond script.
Oh, my
supposedly
God. Yeah.
He did do a pitch to, I don't know if it was Saltzman or Broccoli, but they liked the pitch and they bought it from him, but they didn't use it because Saltzman and Broccoli broke up. You know, and Saltzman said he was done with the business and done with Bond and all that. But Clemens did pitch a story to him. He goes, and he was just like, yeah, they didn't use it, though. But he goes, I loved it. He's like,
oh, you bet your ass he would have incorporated some of it into the professionals somewhere along the way.
Oh, yeah, very likely he did. And yeah. But, yeah, Clemens did write a Bond pitch or treatment for them and was paid for it. They were going to use it, but then the Saltzman-Broccoli relationship split. Yeah. So,
well, he gave us the professionals. That's enough.
Yeah, at least I actually ordered the new professionals, the one with Edward Woodward, because I found a cheap box set of that. Yeah. So I'm gonna check that out.
Hasn't got Gordon Jackson, so it really isn't gonna be as good.
I know it's Edward Woodward basically in the Gordon Jackson role, yeah. And I just don't know how that's gonna work. But I understand the show had a bad rep because it aired censored on British television, and then the DVDs are apparently uncut.
Oh,
they actually cut violence out of them. So I was like, okay, I'll check it out then.
Oh, nice.
And, one more director I want to throw out there. Not a European director, but a guy who does good Cloak and Dagger, John Frankenheimer.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah.
I've had a scene where Bond was on heroin for like 45 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, James Ellroy would tell you it would have to be before Robert Kennedy was killed.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that. Go listen to our Manchurian Candidate episode.
Yeah, it's like it would have to be mid-60s Frankenheimer, early 60s.
I think that's if you want that specific type of Bond movie. But anyway, I was just thinking about Frankenheimer. I was going, yeah.
Well, I have always felt every time I'm dissatisfied after I see a Bond movie, why don't they just go back to the Cloak and Dagger stuff and just do a more scaled back adventure?
Well, and, you know, it's always worked when they've done that. Whenever Bond has gotten too big and they've scaled it back, it's always been good.
I mean, just think about it. All the crazy shit and You Only Live Twice. What do you remember most? The ninja trying to drop poison into his mouth.
Yeah. And there's also like, okay, so they scaled back with like Majesties a little bit. Mm-hmm. They scaled back with You Only Live Twice, right?
They actually expanded with that one.
No, not You Only Live Twice. I'm sorry. I meant For Your Eyes Only. That's what I meant.
Yeah, they did.
That's a favorite of mine.
Moonraker was too goofy.
Yeah, and, you know, Living Daylights, Casino Royale. These are all movies that are simpler, that work really well. And I think Bond works really well in that regard. And I'm not saying you have to do that every time, but you know, these movies tend to just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then they go, oh crap, you know, it's a pattern.
Yeah.
Now it's like every other movie. It's too big, and then it gets small and then big, and you know. But I thought Skyfall struck a great balance of the big
it did.
Film.
It really did. I thought I was hoping that was a new that was going to be next level for the Bond series, and they would consistently be like that. And they screwed up again with Spectre.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Chris Gann should have done a Bond movie. they used his leading lady from Beauty and the Beast for Spectre. Yeah. Maybe Chris Gann should have directed the movie, but he's also one of those guys that takes forever, and he's real.
Christoph Gans is kind of – he's one of those guys who's into what he's into, and, you know, yeah. I don't think he's a director for hire, you know.
No, not at all. Otherwise, he'd have made 20 more movies.
Like Guillermo del Toro, as much as I hate him, when he's a director for hire, he's great. Like Blade 2 is awesome, you know.
Yeah, Blade 2 is good.
But you know, when you let him do his thing, that's when you get into trouble. But,
he's just obsessed with ugly things screwing women or whatever the hell,
which is basically his personal life. But anyway,
yeah, I was gonna say it's basically him.
Yeah, well, it's him.
The repulsive creature.
So anyway, well, I think that's it for this week, guys. You have anything else to add?
No, it'll do it.
Well. We'll come back to the Bond well eventually. So
everybody's got their own opinion on the Bond movies. You could anytime I start a Bond, I post about Bond on Facebook. There's 80 friggin' replies on a thread from different people who
wildly different opinions.
Everybody has a completely different opinion about every movie.
All right, I'll
tell
you
what.
People
that hate it for Your Eyes Only, and it's just endless.
When you hear this episode, there will be a post saying that obviously we've released a Bond episode, being this one. Let us know what your favorite Bond is. Or what my favorite Bond is.
I'm always interested in the movies people hate, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't expect me to reply because I won't be there, but these two guys will.
Well, we can. Winston can weigh in. Just don't tell the Kingston police what his favorites or least favorites are.
He'll like Dr.
No. Dr. No. Dr. No is his favorite.
Well, okay, yeah. Dr. No, but what else?
He's in it. He's an Irish guy in it.
He is, yeah.
He's one of the little kids in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just told him that Peter Tosh was murdered. He was like, no, I can't
take that. Oh, no, he didn't know?
Oh, God. It's only been, what, 34 years since he was killed, or 30-something years. Yeah, he's bummed out, so he said he needed to connect with Mother Earth and sleep a bit. So, yeah, good old Winston. All right, that'll wrap us up, fellas, I think.
All right. With that, I'm going to say adios.
And I will say, corporations still suck.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com, type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.